Architekturfunk, der Heinze-Podcast. Welcome to Heinze Architecture Funk, episode 162. This episode is brought to you by Haushahn. I am Kerstin Kunekat, and today Klaus Fühner is talking to Professor Carlo Ratti. Here we go.
Today I'm talking with the Italian architect, engineer, and urban planner, Professor Carlo Ratti, who is a specialist in the interface of architecture, technology, and urbanism. He's the director of the Sensible City Lab at the MIT Architectural Studio. He's an entrepreneur. He is publishing a lot, and he's a keynote speaker on many stages. Also on our event, the Heinze Baunetz Klima Festival on 21st and 22nd of November in Berlin. Hello, Carlo Ratti.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
You're quite a busy person. You're acting in multiple fields. What is your favorite motto in life to handle all these challenges you're facing?
Oh, that's quite a difficult question. But maybe what I would say is something we all got familiar with during COVID. But I think it still applies to us in everyday life. It's about never let a good crisis go to waste. You know, every day there will be one or more small or big crises. They're usually a good way in order to be creative and think how we face the world in a different way.
Werbung. Echt Haushahn, echt Aufzug. Wir lieben Aufzüge, weil sie das Leben leichter machen. Besonders dann, wenn sie echt zuverlässig, flexibel einsetzbar und vielfältig zu gestalten sind. Planen Sie mit uns den richtigen Aufzug für Ihr Wohnhaus, Ihr Geschäftsgebäude oder Ihre Industrieanlage. Denn Aufzug, das können wir. Ganz flexibel, richtig stark und echt nachhaltig. Erfahren Sie mehr unter haushahn.de. Werbung Ende.
So what do you mean by never let a crisis waste?
Yeah, that every time you got a small problem, you got a difficulty, you know, this is something that people were mentioning a lot during, again, the COVID time when there was a lot of unexpected things every day, then, you know, you need to rethink the way you do things on a daily basis. And that's a way to become more creative and rethink again. Don't take anything for granted.
Yeah. You founded the Sensible City Lab exactly 20 years ago in 2004. What was the original idea to start this laboratory?
Yeah, at the time when we started in 2004, I was at MIT Media Lab, and that was really the beginning of technology becoming much more distributed into the built environment. It was about networks, internet was becoming Internet of Things, and so we thought it was important to look at how all of that and all of the data that we get from networks could actually help us to better understand cities and also make them more sustainable. Now, I would say that today we are looking at things in a more holistic way. We are looking at somehow how we can get a better blend of the natural and the artificial world. That's how we, you know, that's what we focus on today. But somehow it really goes back to that and how atomization and distributing intelligence in the built environment that can change the way we understand it, the way we live it, and the way we build it.
Okay, and today is one of the major goals maybe to investigate and control the effects of overpopulation. Is that one point?
Well, I would say I'm not too concerned about overpopulation today. If you look at fertility rates globally, they're actually quite low. And if you look at prediction over the next 100 or 200 years, unless something radical changes, you know, you see the population is most likely going to go down. But certainly we are facing a very difficult climate crisis. And so it's about how can we leverage the convergence between the natural and the artificial world in order to build more sustainable cities.
Could you give us some examples? What projects are you recently researching and working on?
Sure. I'll give you maybe different projects. I know at the lab at MIT, we focus on research. And one of the things we've been doing recently is actually look at big data in order to better understand the concept of 15-minute city. As you might know, the 15-minute city was proposed a few years ago. as a practice, as a way to make our cities more sustainable by creating walkable unit, walkable neighborhoods. But also many people started, you know, opposing the 15-minute city. And so what we've been doing is actually look at real data and see to which extent, you know, today already cities work as 15-minute cities, and also see, you know, what are the pros and cons. So that's, for instance, one example of how we've been trying to use data in order to inform a better discussion about this very, very important planning concept. And, you know, the result, you find it in an article published in Nature Human Behavior just a few months ago. But the result is that really it's a very powerful concept, although we need to pay attention to a few little things in order not to, for instance, increase segregation in our cities. In our office, we're working on different projects, you know, really blending natural and artificial in different ways. Some of them are under NDA. The most exciting ones are under NDA. You will discover something during the Olympics in Milan, the next Olympics in Milan in a little over a year. But really blending again, finding new ways to blend the natural in the artificial, in what we design and build, both in Italy, New York, and in London. Then, of course, probably the biggest project I'm currently involved with is the Venice Biennale. And the Venice Biennale will really look at some of the things we were saying a moment ago. It's about intelligence, natural, artificial, and collective intelligence. How does three types of intelligence can help us better face the climate crisis?
As we speak about the Biennale, first, I would like to ask you, topping the list of prestigious former curators, how does that feel? Does that put a lot of pressure on you, or is it good, or is it scary for you?
I think, you know, a lot of things you do in life and there's a lot of pressure. But I think the important thing is, after a while, you know, to learn how to manage the pressure. And I really need to thank a lot of the prior curators. I've been, you know, some of them are friends. I've been reaching out to them. You know, we've been really every time, every new Biennale, I think, can learn and can build on what was done. So I'm very grateful to all what they explore, because it's a stepping stone for what we will do next year.
The topic you have announced, you mentioned it already, is intelligence with an S. In the end, natural, artificial, collective. What's the idea behind these four words?
First of all, about the title, yes, you know, it's spelled in using the Latin spelling. And, you know, usually the Venice Biennale has two titles, the Italian title and the English title. But somehow both of them in this case have the same root. And the reason we like the root is that actually if you look at the last part about gens, spelled like G-E-N-S, that actually means people. And so we like this kind of collective idea of intelligence, multiplicity of intelligence. Today, everybody talks about ChatGPT, but there's much more than that. And architecture has been leveraging different types of intelligence, the natural intelligence of the materials, of the environment, the artificial intelligence, the electromechanical intelligence that allows us to do things we couldn't just a few decades ago. And also the collective intelligence, how we can come together through networks to do what we've been doing for thousands of years as humans in shaping our environment. Well, you know, we'd like to explore that. And I think the important thing is that if you look at architecture schools today, every vertical is separate from the other one. So, you know, people looking at natural intelligence or that those type of issues don't talk to people looking at smartness and don't talk to people looking like, well, we think that somehow we need to work together as a common thread that's really intelligence. And if we, in order to face the climate crisis, we need to bring our forces, to join forces, to come together, to bring the three intelligence as one.
For the first time, a space of ideas has been established for everyone. Architects, non-architects were invited to submit their proposals for making this challenging world a little better. How important is collaboration for our future life?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important. You know, it's not only the collective intelligence we will explore at the Biennale, but actually wanted to walk the talk. We wanted to bring this kind of bottom-up and collective approach also in the curation process. traditionally, the curation process is very top-down. You know, you got the curator, the director, or the biennale making decisions about who's invited and who's not. And that will be the case as well, but really want to also have a bottom-up. And that's why for the first time, we opened this kind of call for ideas. We were flooded, to be honest, with proposals from all over the world, but that was very exciting. And a lot of the people who submitted will have, you know, very key roles as part of the exhibition. Some of the people we knew, but also other people we've not have discovered without this. So somehow we like this idea of open source architecture, similar to open source software, that we want to bring to the Biennale.
There's also a invitation for young professionals to participate on the Biennale. Can you tell us something about it?
Yeah, totally. That is called the Biennale College. To be honest, that is something that already happened last year with Leslie Locco's Biennale. That was the first time that the college was launched. And the college is kind of doing something similar to what you know, the Venice Biennale has also the cinema section where the Golden Lion in Venice is awarded at the end of this week, for instance, in Venice. And in this case, you know, the cinema has been having this cinema college for a number of years. It's been very successful where, you know, young filmmaker actually got a bit of money to do their first production. And so last year, for the first time, it happened in architecture with Leslie Locco. And this year, we are going to build on the beautiful things that Leslie did in order to bring a new generation of architects and planners and artists to the Biennale, to Venice, and show their work.
Mm-hmm. And I read also that there's a living lab established as the center pavilion in the Giardini. What will take place there?
It is not exactly like this. The Biennale, as you might know, has two main sites. The main exhibition has two main sites. One is called the Giardini at a place called the Central Pavilion, and the other one is the Arsenale. So the Arsenale, beautiful building of the Arsenale. Now, next year, the Giardini building, the Central Pavilion, will be under refurbishment. And so what we decided, you know, there were different options to do something temporary and so on, but we decided actually to use Venice itself as a canvas. And so all the projects that we would have put inside that building actually are going to be very exciting projects distributed through Venice. And those will be a great opportunity to see how Venice can actually be, as you said, a living lab to develop new ideas for the city, for the future of the city, but also for other cities around the world.
Is this the attempt to bring together architects and non-architects to get the best result or the best solutions for our future life?
Yeah, that would be, I would say, an even broader theme. It will be, yes, we'll be part of the Living Lab, but also we'll be inside the Arsenale. And we really, you will see next year, you know, we'll see this a bit of an experiment. Hopefully, everything will work out fine. But you will see, you know, architects, designers, planners working together with top scientists, with philosophers, with others, and all of them on an equal basis. You know, not a traditional way where you got an architect with consultants, but really having a team. Mm-hmm. A little bit like how you would do a scientific paper, developing new knowledge that will be exhibited at the Arsenale or throughout Venice.
There's also has also been announced a circularity manifest for the Biennale. Why do we need this? Will circularity save our planet?
Well, you know, we've been involved in many temporary events. You know, we've done a lot of projects for expos, for the Olympics. I was the curator of the Shenzhen Biennale a few years ago. I was involved with Manifesta, the Manifesta Biennale. You know, we like temporary events because usually you can push the boundary more. For instance, when you work at the World Expo, like in Osaka next year, or you know, in Dubai last time. And so when you work at the World Expo, you can really do things that normally you cannot do in the middle of a city. You can take more risk. You can push the boundary. So we like it. But at the same time, something I always had problems with is that you're building something. Think about the World Expo. You're building like a temporary city. But unlike Burning Man, you know, that city then goes to landfill. If you think about burning manure, the idea that you keep the plate, that you recycle, reuse, or burn down things at the end is crucial to the event. And, you know, if you think about many export temporary events, you know, you get to see a lot of things that, a lot of stuff that ends up after a few months in a big landfill. And so we want to use the Biennale as a way to change the way we do things. And so we've been working with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation and with ARUG. And then with a number of other people you will discover at the Arsenal next year, again, in order to do a circularity manifesto and start working towards temporary event where nothing is wasted at the end.
So we are really looking forward to the Biennale 2025. You are also running an architectural studio and you're working on several projects, for example, the French Pavilion for the Expo in Osaka. What role does this practical work have in your life?
Yes, you're right. And as I mentioned, we've been working with quite a few expo. Osaka next year will be the next one. We've been working in Dubai. We had done the Italian Pavilion in Milan. We had the Future Food District. Milan, the theme was food. In Saragossa, we had the Digital Water Pavilion. And as I was saying, you know, we like this because it's a way to push the boundary. But more in general, I think, you know, the way to look at it, we are passionate about innovation in the built environment. And we think we must innovate in the built environment in order, again, to face a climate that might be tougher than what we expected just 1, 2, or 3 years ago. And so to innovate, then you need to have a research component. That's what we do at MIT. You'd have a practice component. That's what you know, we do at Caloretta Societi in our design office in Europe, in the US, and so on, in Asia. And then you also want to, you know, have impact through scaling up things. And that's where some of the companies we started have been playing. So somehow you also need to use that. But if you look at this as the same thing, it's about innovation in the built environment and how you can achieve it through different channels.
Yeah, one final question in memory to this computer crash we had a couple of weeks ago all over the world that crippled almost everything. You do a lot of research in how digitalization can solve, optimize, and ecologize human challenges, and encourage countries to find regional solutions for their problems. Do you personally think that our dependence on technology went maybe a little bit too far? Or maybe, let me say, different? How can we make sure that and secure that technology won't be our end?
I like this question. It's a very important one. Now, if you look at this in the long term, you know, in the past, we would succumb not to technology, but say to the plague. In the Middle Ages, you know, the population of Venice, for instance, was cut by 60%. 60% of the people died at the time because of the Black Plague or other crises. So somehow, you know, the unexpected would be said at the very beginning. This is really about, you know, a crisis. And, you know, we had a lot of them. Sometimes they were nature made. Yes, today we got some of them, they are human-made, but it seems to me that actually our ability to respond is improving. And again, some people, some philosophers have been looking at this and writing about this, but the ability to respond to crisis has been improving. So yes, you know, technology is never a solution. Technology, you know, it's famously as Cedric Price once said, you know, if technology is a solution, what is the problem? So somehow technology can be used in very different ways. But it seems to me that overall, the systems we are building are making us more resilient. And it doesn't mean that we don't face existential and very difficult and tough problems, starting from the climate crisis that we'll explore at the Biennale next year. But it seems to me that still, versus vis-a-vis the condition we had a few hundred years ago or thousands of years ago, we are building more resilient systems.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time. We are looking forward to meet you in person on the Klima Festival on 21st and 22nd of November. Thank you very much. Professor Calorati.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, I look forward to continuing the conversation in Berlin soon.
And that's it for today. This episode was brought to you by Haushahn. The Heinze Baunetz Climate Festival will take place on 21st and 22nd November at the station in Berlin. You can find the link to the program and registration in the show notes. Exclusively for our listeners, there's a voucher for free entry to the entire festival. Simply enter the code AF2024 when purchasing your ticket online and you will receive a free ticket. If you like the podcast, please recommend it to others and rate it. I look forward to you joining us again next week. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Bye.
Architekturfunk.
Das war der Heinze Podcast Architekturfunk. Redaktion Klaus Fühner und Kerstin Kunekat. Moderation Klaus Fühner. Produktion und Veröffentlichung Kerstin Kunekat. Berlin 2024.